Right on the button, guys.
Right last here,
guys.
Stone for Kevin Martin. They want it on the button. The fans are on their feet. Kevin Martin goes out as a champion.
Hi again, everybody. And this is me laughing. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming out with another episode of Inside Curling with Kevin Martin, of course, and Warren Hansen, our two Hall of Famers, World Hall of Famers. We're going to bring them on shortly. And one day we're going to do a show with bloopers. Okay. One day we're going to before, but we don't have a sponsor yet. So we don't want to do any of that. I had a hard time. Okay. I had a hard time. The pre-show meeting we had. Okay. I'm concentrating. But we're back once again. And we've got a great show coming up. Kevin, first of all, how are you doing?
Really good, Jimmy. Yeah. Everything's going okay. You know, it's, we're getting through the, these COVID times of ours and looking forward to hopefully some curling on TV during the bubble.
Yeah, right. How are you doing, Warren? You're out west still. We haven't lost you.
I'm out west, and we just avoided some snow here the last few days, so that makes me very happy as I just continue to live more days of Groundhog Day.
That a boy. Yeah, it is Groundhog Day. We have an absolutely jam-packed show coming up for you today, including a guest, Kelsey Rock, who is the two-time world junior champ she won in 2014 and 2015. And yet another exceptional curler, Kevin, from Alberta is coming on the program. And you remember her, Kevin, from when she was, 13 or something?
Started to come to our curling academies. Yeah. As a little girl. But boy, could she throw the rock well back then. And we're all going, ooh, this kid is going to be real good. And it's turned out that, yeah, that's what happened. So known Kelsey for a very long time.
Right. And we're going to talk to her about the Scotties. It's about what's coming up for her, whether she's going to be there or not. We'll find out. And a lot more. The rest of the show is going to be about what are the Scotties and the Briar up to? Is this thing going to happen? How many teams are going to get in there? Warren, you're going to give us an update on that, as well as a poll question about the structure of the Scotties and Briars. We got some emails. Mark Dixon is a guy who sent us one saying, it's really boring at my club. Okay, we got to fix it. Also about the wild cards, we've got some input from a guy who said he's got an idea of who should be in the wild card. And that's interesting. Also, what about instruction? Okay, how should people be taught at the clubs and how much of it should there be? Which is a great email that we had from Joe Hollis. So all that and a bunch more, of course, including our guest, Kelsey. If you want to get a hold of us, email us, insidecurling@gmail.com. Twitter, we're on at Curling Inside. Facebook, Inside Curling, and Instagram at Inside Curling Podcast. We want to thank a bunch of people, including Rod Paulson. And also, I guess we should take a moment to thank our editor and producer, okay, because I cause him a lot of trouble when we do this show. And we want to thank Steve Warren, who's back in Ottawa doing all this for us. So, Warren, let's jump right in. What's the update here on the Scotties and Briars? Is it going to happen? And who's getting in?
Well, we hope it's going to happen. But I think before we launch into that, we should talk about the poll that we did in our Facebook group a few days ago. And as we No, Curling Canada advised a couple of weeks ago that the Briar and Scotties this year are going to be 18 teams versus the 16 that has been the standard in the last few years. So we were thinking, well, 18, maybe if it went to 20, you know, you could probably be fairly assured of getting in the top 10 teams on the Canadian team ranking system. So we thought, let's ask our fans what they think of that. So this question was put forward. Curl Canada has made the 21 Scotties and Briar into 18 team events for 2022. How about something that maybe satisfies many wishes? Instead of going back, how about going forward? Start by maybe eliminating Team Canada, build a 20 team field based on 14 provincial territorial teams plus 6 from the CTRS. Based on recent history, this would likely net you at least 10 of the top 10 teams in the country playing in both the Scotties and the Briar. And I think the way we're set today with Guchu and Jacob is probably 12 teams. So we asked, yes, I like it. No, go back to 16. Or no, go back to 14. Interesting enough, 73% of the people that answered that question thought the 20-team approach was a good idea. Only 4% Listen to this. Only 4% wanted to go back to 16 teams, and 23% wanted to go back to 14 teams. So I find that a very interesting response, along with the comments we got, that a lot of people sort of said, well, yeah, maybe this is the way we satisfy both worlds. What do you think, Kevin?
I actually like that, especially if you can maybe call the six CTRS teams prior to provincials, have them not play in the provincials. That might really expand the amount of teams coming into the champion, like into playdowns.
You like Jim? What, 20 teams, Kev? That's what you like?
I like the 20 team idea. And the reason being is to expand the field into getting, make sure all the best teams in your nation are in the national championship. But in doing so, it might even help get more teams into the playdown structure because you've got the top six teams already in. They're in. So then,
regardless of what province they're from. Yeah, that's it.
Just making sure of a really good field.
Like Newfoundland and Northern Ontario, you take Jacobs and Gushue out, all of a sudden that's wide open and all kinds of people are going to maybe try to go in it. You go into Manitoba and Alberta in both the men's and women's, and you take out one of those top teams, you now again open up more opportunities. So I think it would do a lot of things, and maybe that's the approach that's needed to be taken to go from where we are now into something that's a little different, and we still satisfy the need of many people feeling this interprovincial representation is necessary, but we also at the same time make sure we've got all the top teams in the sport in the event. So maybe it's a way of bridging the whole thing over. Just an interesting response.
Warren, you think that you like the 20 team format as well, or something in around there, more teams? Warren, you're happy?
I think it maybe is what we need to get from where we are now, where I think we're stuck, into a new approach.
Okay. So Kevin, if we do that, you've got, I think you said 14 teams from the provinces and territories. Then you got to make up these other six teams. Who would get in now, Kevin?
Well, just, you know, I think it's important that a national championship have your top 10. Your top 10 teams in the nation right now in the women's side. So for the Scotties, you want to make sure that team Anderson, number one, Fleury, number two, Jones, number three, Holman, number four, of course, Kelsey Rock, number five, who may or may not. We'll talk to Kelsey in a little while. Walker of Alberta, number six. Corinne Brown, who's on our show a couple weeks ago, seven. And then Bert. Now, that's leaving Bert, but they haven't played the PEI provincial yet. But Bert is then. And then Zacharias and Peterson. That's your top 10 on the women's side. And there's a really good chance, as long as Bert wins at a PEI, that every top 10 team, and maybe not Team Rock, will be in this year's Scotties. So going forward, if it's a 20 team, you will likely get your top 10. On the men's side, the top 10, you've got Jacobs, number one, Epping, number two, Gushue, number three, Botcher, number four, McEwen, number five, Cooey, number six, Dunstone, seven, Gunnickson, eight, and then Colton Flash, who won't be in the Briars, number nine, and Howard, number 10. So, and then right after Howard is Tanner Horgan. So in this year, you'd have 9 of 10, but if you expand to 20, you'd have 10 of 10. So, you know, it's a way, as to Warren's point, a way of maybe changing things a little bit, keeping both sides happy. You've got your provincial representation, but yet you've got the top 10 teams in the nation in the national championship, which should give us our best representative at the world championships. So it gives Canada the best chance to win. That seems to make sense to me.
Well, and Glenn Howard can bring his per diem, can be his pension check. How old is Glenn Howard now? Well into his 50s, isn't he?
He's 58.
Yeah. Well, good for him. He's in the top 10. Warren, I got a question for you. I've always thought, and I love the Briar. I went for years and years. But I got to be honest, I always thought it was too long, this 10-day deal, probably because I drank so much back in those days and had to get up each morning. But how are you possibly going to pull off 20-team Scotties or Briars, and everyone thinks it should be shorter anyways if it goes to 8 days? What would be the ultimate for you, Warren, how that the national championship should break down?
Well, if you went into this format, and I guess there's a number of ways you could look at it, but if you go into two pools of 10 teams in each pool, which is two round robins. And I suppose there's various ways of looking at it. They've taken the current situation has eight teams going into the next round. But quite frankly, I think if you simply brought in a page system playoff, which takes the top two teams out of each pool into a page, this could be done in less time than the current format. I think without going into detailed calculations, it could probably be completed with a Monday morning start and a Sunday finish. So I think that it would be desirable in many ways from that point of view as well.
Is it too long then, Warren, the way it is with the 10 days?
I believe it is. There seems to be some feeling out there that it's necessary to take the thing over two weekends. But I think that that appeal has long gone many years ago. And I think without question, and you got to always remember that the facilities and everything you're doing with that event, it costs a lot every day you're in operation. Mm-hmm. So if you're operating now Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of that opening weekend, that's costing you money. And whether you're making more, you know, I don't know. I think it's just going back that everything is going to be has got to be shorter going forward if we're going to bring people under 30 into the sport as players and as spectators. So I think no matter what we do, we have to be always looking at shortening everything up.
Well, that and of course the players being so busy now that to use up two weekends for one event, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You could play somewhere nearby the Scotties or the Briar, have an event nearby ending Sunday afternoon. You could still start the next event on the Monday.
What about the players, Kevin? Are they, would they like it to be shorter? I mean, you played in it for years. So did you, Warren?
Oh yeah. So back in the day, if you want to go walk it back in time, 30 years, there wasn't this huge tour worldwide busy. Players are playing every week. That didn't exist back then. But now the players are so busy. I think they'd really appreciate the event starting on Monday and then being able to curl somewhere else. You wouldn't be all on the other side of the world because you got to get back for a Monday morning at the Briar Scotties, but you could certainly finish up Sunday afternoon somewhere, get into the city and throw some practice rocks on the Scotties and Briar ice on the Sunday night and let her go Monday morning. Here we go. Mm-hmm. I think that'll work just fine.
Right. Yeah. And this current development goes back into the 80s and 90s when we had a lot of people that traveled to a Briar for the entire week or 10-day period, and you could go there for that entire period of time, or you could come into a closing weekend package. It was geared to be able to accommodate people that were going to come there for the whole week. I don't think that's happening much anymore. That's been dying since probably 2010, and you're not having a huge amount of people traveling in there and spending 10 days. So I think, again, it makes sense to shorten everything up. So let's talk about who's going to be in these events and what's going to happen. So let's first take a look at the women's side. So we talked last week about the provinces and territories that have declared winners. Kevin mm-hmm. may want to talk a bit about that, but I want to talk about the wildcard teams as we sit today. On the women's side, it looks like the first choice will be Tracy Fury, who is currently sitting in position two. On the women's side, we have an interesting situation. Of course, we'll talk to Kelsey later. She's virtually number five, and Chelsea Carey, number six, both won't be eligible because they changed two players. And then we go down to position number nine, which is currently held by Susan Burt from PEI, and they haven't played their provincials yet. So if she was to lose, she would be the second team in because she's in position number nine. But we're assuming she wins, which means Mackenzie Zacharias, who is currently sitting, I think, number 11, will be the second team from the wildcard side. But now it gets really interesting because we're going to go to position 12, which is Beth Peterson, another Manitoba team, who would take the third wildcard spot if it continues like they've said it's going to go totally by CTRS. So what comes down there is very interesting. If that's what takes place, if Suzanne Burt wins PEI, there will be five teams from Manitoba in the Scotties. What do you think of that, Kevin?
And they're all really, really good. You could definitely have... I know Rachel Holman won't want me saying this, but you could have the at least three of the final four be from one province. You could have in the semifinal Manitoba, Manitoba, and in the final Manitoba, Manitoba. So that's an interesting scenario. First time ever there could be five teams from one province in a national championship in curling. And of course, I like it because that's the depth Manitoba has in women's curling right now.
Just what we're talking about. If that's where the good players are, we want the top players to be in our national championship. So shouldn't matter which province they come from.
Do you see a, I see a problem here, Warren, with all this talk about, okay, you know, you scrap the provincial boundary, or although we will have teams from each province, but we're going to have a bunch more teams from, you know, to make up this wild card of these other six. What about if you're running a, the TV station, Warren, and they step up and go, wait a minute here. We want to spread this out across the country for our viewership. Might they have something to say if it's, if they look at the possibility of two teams from one province, or do you see that as a problem or not?
Well, I suppose there was a time, point in time, I can remember back in the 80s, we always felt that, or even the 90s, the best two teams for a Brier final would be Alberta and Ontario, because that would bring in the largest number of cable subscribers that were from those two provinces. So that's going to bring you the biggest audience. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a particular big issue anymore. I believe that we've got a number of good teams across the country. Yes, the province that that team is from is going to probably attract a few more viewers, but I don't think it's the kind of concern that maybe once would have been. Do you, Kevin?
No, I really don't either. It's all about the best against the best. And that's what I appreciate in all sports, watching the two best teams. And it doesn't really matter to me where they're from. I think those are sort of gone.
Yeah. If it happens, it'll be interesting. So on a men's side, wild card number one should probably go to Mike McCune, because I think he's currently in the fourth position. And then right behind him, Kevin Cooey would be wild card number two. And wild card number three, very interesting, should be Glenn Howard, who he's in number nine position. But interesting, young Tanner Horgan from Manitoba is just 10 points behind Glenn. So very close. But if they go by the CTRS points, that's the way things will shake down on the men's side. So what do you think of that, Kevin?
Well, it's just a wicked tough field.
Yeah,
it's incredible. Outside of Colton Flash, of course, you've got your top 10 all in there. And wow, it's going to be really, really tough for any team outside. And I remember, of the top 10 teams, nine are in, but you've got Steve Laycock with Jimmy Cotter. They just don't play a lot, but they're really, really good. So somebody else coming outside of that top 10 to get to the into the playoffs, ooh, that's going to be a really, really tough goal for somebody. That is a dream field.
Right. Let's go to this thought here, Warren, because we did have someone getting a hold of us about the wild card. So we might as well bring this up right now. Sheldon Spear writes us, having just read the news of who's in the Brier and the Scotties this year, a thought. In line with some of your comments to get more youth exposed, have last year's junior teams as the last wild card entry, or have a youth team selection criteria to be determined to be the last team. I kind of like that idea, Warren, that if you were, you know, there's all this talk and angst that we got to get more young kids involved. Should we have a junior team at the national championships and the Scotties and Brier?
That's an interesting question. That happens in the United States. They do, on occasion, allow a junior team into some of their top competitions. I'm not sure if it's good for the team, if it can be damaging to them. I suppose it's not going to do them any harm, and they're going to get a huge amount of experience from it, but certainly I wouldn't expect that they're going to be a winner, but I probably have mixed feelings about it. What do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, you know, for two reasons. I think it's good to get the young teams on, you know, in a big stage, arena ice. They might get beat up pretty bad. That's the only thing. But there have been junior teams in the past, like a Tyler Tardy, who would not get, like, they'd be in the running in most games. But he's a special case. Mm-hmm. And so is there always, you know, the Gretzky, somebody like that coming up? It doesn't happen all the time. So it's just kind of a matter of, I don't know if you could pick or choose. So that's the problem. You know, some years that the junior reps would not be able to handle it. And then other times you get these phenoms that come up, like a Kelsey Rock. When she came out of junior, she certainly could have played at the Scotties level. So you know what? I guess it kind of depends who wins. And,
yeah.
You know, and but to do it every year, I'm not sure that's a good idea.
Yeah, it depends on teams. I mean, I'm thinking here about Paul Gausel. I mean, who was wins two world juniors in 76, 78, but during that period of time, beat up every top men's team in the country at every Bonspiel he went into.
Right.
And so there's, Kevin says, there are those exceptions who could possibly do very well. So interesting idea.
Yeah. Tell me, Martin. Okay. If you think we shouldn't have a junior team, how would you like it if someone knocked on your door when you were a champion junior curler and said, we'd like you to go to the Briar?
Huh? Yeah, it wouldn't have taken long to pack the bag, I'll tell you.
Right, exactly.
we would have been ready to go.
Right, exactly. So good stuff. Hopefully COVID won't jam us up anymore. And that what's the dates they're talking about again for the Scotties and Briars?
I believe the Scotties is scheduled to start around the third week of February.
Okay.
And of course the Briar would have a week between the two, and then it would go around the first week of March.
So little less than a month for the Scotties.
It's coming up soon. Yep. Very quick.
Good stuff. Hope they can do it. Curling clubs. We got an email from Mark Dixon. Allow me to read this. The club I come from is in Merritt, BC. I'm 48 years old and have been curling for about 6 years. Been watching it on TV for 12 or so. The problem with my club is it's boring. Ooh, right to the point. If the league games are not being played, there's no one there. The lights go on 10 minutes before, and as soon as the last rock is thrown, the lights go off. Most of the teams have been together for a very long time and are very painful to play, as in slow. Like the game needs to slow down a little bit. We actually had a fun night a couple years ago, and it was fun. Leads picked the skips, and seconds picked the thirds, not from their own team. I learned from being with different people, 10 ends versus 8 ends. I'm leaning towards 8. The first two are usually blank anyway and trying to save time. So that's from Mark. The last time, Kevin, this guy had fun at his club was 2 years ago. You grew up at clubs. Is this guy far off base? Is this sort of generally what we're hearing from clubs, or is it just him? Maybe Merritt's a really boring town.
I was just going to say, I've never been in that club. But I hope they're not mad at us for putting this out, and they might be mad at him. But that's really interesting. But it goes back to that discussion, that I've had with various people about different games, be it doubles or be it triples and four person curling. And he may be a person who's stuck at lead for too many years. You know what I mean? He's just stuck in that one position and not able to experience all the different parts of the game. And that is one thing, though, going back to when I was growing up, I always felt it was important that the lights stay on at the rink, even if you're the last draw. So you're up in the lounge, as soon as the lights go off at the club, it's kind of, okay, lights are out. It's time to go home. But, it's kind of fun to go upstairs and have a cocktail when you're done. But I kind of think I agree with him that you should probably leave the lights on so you've got that atmosphere of a club.
Yeah. What do you say, Warren?
Well, I think it's an interesting comment, and I think I understand it from the fact that most of these curling clubs today still, everything is more or less geared towards playing at some kind of a competitive level of some sort. And I think certainly in my day and age, there was attitude that's sort of what club play was all about. But I think we're into a point in time here where people are looking, particularly the younger ones, they want to have fun. And I think, however, whatever curling games or leagues or whatever you're creating, you have to keep that in mind. And you may want to have your semi-serious or serious competitive aspect in your club, but you always need to have, I believe, an element that people can play in if they desire to, that's strictly fun. And I think Chuck Tyer, when we had him on, expressed that league that he started on Saturday nights with the softball players was a prime example. Right. And I think as clubs are going forward, they've got to be thinking, if they're going to bring in new people, that this fun aspect has to be certainly there with what they're doing, and people have to feel always that it's enjoyable and not, as he says, boring.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, you compare curling to golf, okay, a lot, and golf suffered the same problem for many years. It's a four-hour round, and yet they want people to support the club for the food and bev. And yet it just gets to be too long. They came up with a brilliant idea. It's called nine and dine. Yeah. Okay. Is what they did. So the cuts that, it's nine holes but you pay a green fee for nine, but it includes food. Okay. You get a deal on the food. And why if you want to get people into your bar, Warren, why not just make it, by the way, you got an $8 voucher here for food.
There's so many ideas if you use a little imagination. I have had one that people complain, well, mixed doubles, you only got half the people and yada, yada, yada. I'm saying, well, okay, so why don't we have two sets of mixed doubles teams, and we'll play eight ends, and four people will play two ends while the other four are having maybe some food and beverage, and then you switch up, and so you end up playing an eight-end mixed doubles game with each group playing four ends each. And so you've made a whole social event out of it. And I think it's so many things like that. Just use some imagination and gear the thing at having some fun versus the competitive aspect, which a lot of people have. And I know golf leagues still do the same thing. They got their men's night and their women's night for the people who want to be somewhat competitive.
Right.
But for those who just want to go out and golf, well, you book a tee time and you play. Mm-hmm. And I think curling has to begin to lean more in that direction of the people who just want to book a tee time and play.
Poor Mark Dixon. Maybe we should leave his name out of this. He's going to walk into his club and they're going to beat the tar out of him. Going,
he didn't say don't mention my name. So
yeah, he did. The poor clubs, you know, trying to get membership. And this, the only email we ever read from Merritt and the Merritt Curling Club is a guy saying it's boring. Well, we understand, and it's an uphill battle for clubs. So very good, boys. Well done. You know, if you'd like to speak to us, we started some Zoom meetings. We've done eight of them with clubs from around the world, including the Barrie Country Club, Belgium, Wisconsin. Kevin, you did one. We were on a Zoom with Detroit. And we're inviting you to the possibility of us doing a Zoom call with you. We'd love to do it. Would be with me, of course, Kevin and Warren, to discuss anything you would like about curling. Please keep in mind we're doing this on a limited basis to see how it goes and if there's something inside curling should consider to offer going forward. We found the Barrie Curling Club, by the way, loved it. Did you see how keen they were, Kevin and Warren? They had their pad of paper and their pencils, and you guys were very good and candid with them about how to improve things at their club.
We've had very good discussions and about all things about curling, not just the operation of a club, but whatever they wanted to talk about, we've discussed. So by all means, drop us a note.
Yep. Also, we want to thank Rod Paulson. We've got an extremely vast presence now on social media, and that's thanks to In-House Strategies. You can email us insidecurling@gmail.com or on Twitter at Curling Inside, Facebook at Inside Curling, and of course Instagram we're on at Inside Curling Podcast. Okay, it's time to bring on our guest. You guys, we talked about it at the start of the show. We're really pleased to be joined by Kelsey Rock, who is a very accomplished junior curler, 2014-2015 world champion. And God, she's right on the brink here, Kev, of busting through. She was in the final of the last two provincials. How are you, Kelsey?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're well, thanks for coming on the show. You're gonna save it. I get a little tired of warning, Kevin, after a while. So you are yet another highly successful curler from Alberta. Congratulations. You won the World Juniors in 20. I want to get all this right now. In 2014, 2015. You were a national university champ in 2015, 2016, and you won the Universiade in 2017. Like I say, congratulations on all that. Let's talk about how it all started for you. We know the Rock name, of course, is synonymous with, I read today, it's like, he's kind of your cousin, but they said he's like three or four times removed.
If I had a dollar for every time someone thought Marcel was my dad, I think I'd be rich right now. But no, my dad doesn't curl at all. He's definitely a beer league men's Wednesday night curler. I got into curling. I played a lot of other sports growing up, to be quite honest. I didn't get into curling until I was about 12 or 13. And then I just had a friend that took me to a Bring a Buddy Day in Fort Saskatchewan where I grew up. And I kind of got involved with the junior program there and carried on through there and through Gibbons, which is another small town just outside of Fort Saskatchewan. And then towards the end of high school, I moved into the Saville Center and started curling with that program.
So how did you learn to curl then when you were 12 or 13? What did you call on Marcel or we often talk about how kids get into the game and then become really good. So take us through that path.
To be quite honest, I didn't have a lot of connection with, I knew him from, you know, family reunions and things like that. But as far as getting into curling, I never really got taught by him when I initially first started. I owe all the credit to the Fort Junior program. There's a bunch of really good coaches there and then into Gibbons as well. And I spent pretty much every night. My bus driver was actually the ice maker at our rink, our local rink. Yeah. So I would stay on the bus after school and he'd drive me to the rink and I'd go throw rocks and did that pretty much every day during the week.
And what about now? What's happening with your team? You've been to the provincial finals. Is it the last 2 years in a row?
Yeah. The last 2 years we played in the provincial finals and obviously been unsuccessful thus far, but Kevin once told me, actually, I think after we lost our second provincial final, he said, well, if you keep putting yourself in those kind of games, eventually you'll win one. So, that's the plan and the experience is great moving forward.
And what's your team doing now? Are you throwing rocks or what's happening?
Saville Center's closed down. Every rink, honestly, in Alberta is pretty locked shut. And we unfortunately didn't get into the bubble. So our season, unless we get into the Grand Slams later on in the year, our season is effectively done.
Yeah, well, there's maybe some controversy around this that the boys, that Kevin and Warren want to talk to you about. But before we do that, are you still the curling coordinator at U of A?
I am, yes. Yeah, I'm still doing that right now.
And what does that entail, that job?
Basically anything that comes through the Saville doors that has to do with curling goes through me. So it's quite busy. I manage all the leagues there, anything National Training Center, I kind of coordinate those practices for those athletes. All of our junior programming, I would coordinate onto the ice. I don't do a ton of coaching, but I would go out and help and coach when that's needed as well. So definitely fills my time and I give a lot of credit to them because they let me go away and curl in the winters too.
Nice.
Yeah, I want to just ask you about the Saville Center because, of course, that's the National Training Center of tons of really good teams practice there. Is there any chance that I think the ice is still in, I think. So with the ice being in, is there a chance that maybe there'll be some training be allowed before the bubble event for some of the top teams?
Yeah, it's kind of sounding that way. I think kind of working alongside with Curling Alberta just to get kind of a curling hub that those athletes going into the bubble can practice before they head there. So I think in the next week or so, we should have more info on that. And I'm leaning towards our doors are probably going to be opening.
I sure hope you're right.
Yeah.
Of course, Jimmy, my store is about 20 feet inside the doors. So I have to get Dan or one of the guys working there to open the door so I can go in and do a few things at the store.
Yeah, it's a selfish thing, Kevin. It's very selfish. Okay. well, there's been some talk at the top of the show, Kelsey, about these are very, very odd times. They're going to try and pull off the Scotties and Briars. And I know Warren wants to talk to you about this sort of very uncertain thing about you losing two players on your teams and whether you will ever be able to play in the Scotties or not.
Well, I guess, Kelsey, as we all know, that last week, I believe it was, Curling Canada announced that the Briar and Scotties are going to be 18 teams, which meant there's going to be 3 wildcard entries in both those events. So they've made it fairly clear that wildcard entries are going to be on the Canadian team ranking system for the first two anyway. And you're in kind of a strange position of actually last year being ranked number 5, which would have automatically put you in, except you have 2 new players. And I guess the interesting thing is if those new players that are with you had been able to bring their CTRS points forward with them, you'd probably still rank high enough to get into that event. And I guess one of the things is going forward, do you think that those CTRS points should be left as they are per team or should they be going with individual players if they move to another team? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. The last week I've spent a lot of time thinking about it. I just want to say first and foremost that I understand it's a pandemic and that there's things where they're happening right now that people have never experienced before. So that I 100% understand. I guess the thing that I'm getting at is sometimes in a cycle, when you change teams and it's 2 and 2, I know order of merit works where, you would combine those team points and then you'd still get a world ranking the next year. Yep. Whereas CTRS effectively starts at 0 every year, basically. So it's like basically a fresh slate. So not having to play really affected us this year, especially with 2 and 2. The biggest thing that I see with the 2 and 2 rule is it penalizes teams for maybe seeking a better opportunity or forming a better team moving forward. Or whatever it may be that, you were forced to change teammates and maybe a team moved on without you, things like that. So I would like to see it change moving forward. And maybe there comes up with a rule that's, fair in regards to something similar to the order of merit that they have. But then again, affect, are we ever going to see a season like this again? But I just think it's a topic of conversation that maybe we want to maybe discuss a little more and see if there are some options moving forward.
Well, I think even in a quadrennial, it would now allow a team to make some changes once you start into a quadrennial, if the points were moving forward with the player, which now you're pretty much stuck the way the whole thing operates, as to you probably have difficulty changing team in any way, shape or form once a quadrennial starts. I guess you can change one player, but if you go with two, it's a bit of a problem. Another question in the same lines is, they have suggested that the third team will not necessarily be chosen from the CTRS. I'm not sure what that means. Has anybody suggested to you that they might possibly consider your team?
It was kind of up in the air, I think, until last Thursday. And then Curling Canada sent out a release that basically said that they are going down the CTRS list. So we would effectively be skipped under that criteria.
So is there no chance that you'll get into the Scotties?
Zero chance. Yeah, it's been confirmed that we're done. We're out.
Yeah. Yikes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Unfortunate situation. Anyway, hopefully it's going to lead to some reconsiderations. I think the whole Canadian team ranking system and the order of merit, a bunch of people need to get their heads together, I think, and come up with a standard system that probably has some different flares to it. And as to where one comes in, the other one goes out, I think has to be determined as well. But unfortunate for sure.
Yeah, I certainly think it is important to have points go with every player. Because in Kelsey's case, I think we'll hear from you, but that front end you just picked up, that's an all-star front end. Like you'd be crazy not to, in my opinion, to make that change that you made. Like, wow, to get Rochelle and Dana on the team, that's solidified your front end, and was such a strong back end that you've already got. It's a really good look going forward. So it is a real shame you guys being ranked so high in the both the world ranking and the Canadian ranking, and because of a rule that it is a rule, but I'm not sure it makes much sense to hold a team that potentially could win the national championship back. I don't know. It sure bothers me a lot. But I'd like to ask you about your thoughts on changing the team, if there are any second thoughts or not, because it costs you a visit, to your national championship, but it might help you on your way to Beijing. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, my short answer would be absolutely not. I have no regrets with making the change. I think, like you said, it's a no-brainer when, one of the best front-end pairs in the world, it comes up, and that opportunity we had to take. So definitely no regrets with that. It's really unfortunate that we are kind of getting penalized by not being able to go to the national championship. But at the same time, this team was built for moving forward, and with a big focus on the trials. That would be our biggest thing. So, as far as that goal goes, we're still on par for it. And we'll just keep moving forward and just take this as a speed bump along the way.
As far as the structure of the Scotties are concerned, Endebar, you've probably heard us talk a lot about some of our thoughts and some of our guests regarding how things should be structured going forward, because there is some issues for sure. And of course, Curling Canada going to, with this particular year of 18 teams, which is two more than in the past, so there's three wildcard teams. We talked about it earlier in the show, but we put out an interesting question on our Facebook group a couple of days ago about what would you think of a 20-team Scotties and Brier, and it seemingly is getting a lot of good response, which would mean basically you'd have the 14 provincial territorial winners and probably at this point not need Team Canada, so you'd end up with six teams from the CTRS ranking, which would ensure probably all your top 10 teams in both the men's and women's side would be in the event. Interesting enough, a lot of people seem to think that's not a bad idea, as to try to, I guess, serve everyone's needs. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, I think there's a ton of ideas floating around right now in regards to what format could work best, but I do really like that one. Maybe I'm a bit biased coming from Alberta and the fact that it'll be really tough to get out of my province. And I think I'd be naive to not admit that. It looks really, I think the wildcard rule was implemented for that reason, just in the case that, it's based on one game. You have one bad provincial final and now your season's done for the rest of the year. Whereas you could have won everything before that and been, first on CTRS. And now at least that gives you that second chance. going farther down the list, yeah, that's huge too. I mean, last year we finished fifth or sixth on the CTRS and we were done in the provincial final. So a rule like that, I think, helps, and it gets your best teams at a national championship, which at the end of the day keeps the tradition, but also gets your best teams there.
Yeah, I sure think that a 20 team idea, and Warren, I was shocked at the percentage of people that like the 20 team amount at the national championships. I was shocked, actually. I didn't think it would be so popular. So I guess that's great. It's certainly good to have all the teams. One thing when you do the math, though, it'd be two pools of 10, nine game round robin. So that's nine games. And then you get to the final eight. So then it's four more games to get to the page. So now you're at 13 games. And then if you were to win the 1-2 game and the final, then the minimum amount of games to win the national championship would be 15. If you came through a tie break, you could easily have to play 17 curling games.
But Kevin, I don't think you'd need that eight, quite frankly.
You might not even go straight to the page.
Go straight to the page. If you've gone through two 10-team round robins, take out the top two from each side, and away you go. One plays one, two plays two, and I think that would be the better approach. I kind of know why they've got the current system in place, and I think if this was to be the future with the 10 teams, that you could probably do that. So that would probably get you into about 22 draws. So it'd be much about the same length of event as the current one. Actually, the event could be shorter than the current one is with this approach.
Which would be a good thing to shorten it up at least a couple of days.
You could shorten it up by a couple of days. Yes, you could. You could probably do a Monday start with a Sunday finish.
I was just talking to Team Botcher about that, actually, the idea of, because they had heard that it would be two pools of 10 down to eight, down to four. But that's so many games. Now you're getting to a 10-day, 11-day, 12-day event. So that's pretty lengthy.
Yeah, that's too much.
Is there any thought, you brought this up, Kelsey, that, because I've always thought this, and we've had a lot of discussion, a lot of emails from people about the format of the Brier when it was, what was it, saying 20 years ago, Warren, what was it, 12 teams?
Yeah, 12. Yeah.
And so now talking about going to 20. It's kind of seems unfair, Kelsey, that if you had mentioned this earlier, that if you curl in Alberta, where you know, both men and women's, there's one of, you know, six, seven teams that could win that province, you know, maybe 10, I guess, you know, if you're, you guys would know better than I would, but that doesn't seem to be a stretch. But if you're in PEI, there's might be one team that can win it or two teams. Does that kind of bug you that you're curling in Alberta and you have far less of a chance to make the Scotties than other provinces?
The competitive athlete in me says no. To be quite honest, I like competing against all those really good teams. The depth in Alberta is strong, just like it's strong in Ontario and Manitoba. And, you know, every province really has depth. I like it because it pushes me to be better. And that's the bottom line is, I want to go to a provincial championship and know that I have to play at my absolute best to win. And that's, I think, what gives me the thrill to return back every time. So no, definitely no regrets from being from Alberta. That's
that
sure.
A girl, that a girl. Nice. I love that. We have two other guys in this show who are the most competitive people in the world. I don't know who's more competitive, Hanson or Martin. I don't know, Kev, what would you say?
Oh, it has to be Hanson.
I was probably a little more aggressive than Kevin.
Yeah, the two of you.
Okay, a football player, remember?
I would love to see the two of you on a curling team. Okay, third and Skip. Kev, you can skip and Warren be the third. I'd love to put some mics on you guys when Warren goes, I don't think so, Kevin. That's not the We might have to do it.
It's the first shot of the game. I'm just throwing a guard, for goodness sakes.
That would be good. I'm on to something here. I am on to something. You know, these reality TV shows, you guys. Okay, this would be good. A little Masters curling spiel, and you guys would form a team. Warren, you want to ask Kelsey about junior eligibility?
Yes, interesting decision made a couple of years ago by Curling Canada to send the winner of the Canadian Juniors to the World Championship 1 year after they've won. And the reason for it being they felt that the Canadian Championship being held in late January was ending the junior season too early, which I'm certainly of the opinion that other things could have been done, because I lived through the days, and so did Kevin, played through it, where the team being sent a year later created all kinds of sorts of issues. What are your thoughts on that, having won a couple of Canadian juniors and gone to the Worlds? What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of actually been in both positions, because when we won the University Nationals, we waited a full year to go to the University Ed. And to be quite honest, I just felt that the momentum that we carried through the junior wins, what back when it was, you know, you play January Nationals, February, end of February, you're off to Worlds. It was just like boom, boom, boom. And you just carried that momentum through. And I think it showed, you know, those last from, you know, 2011, 2010 through to 2018, 2019, even 2020, we won them both last year. You know, we're still winning a lot. And I think that momentum definitely helps. But when I look at it from a development standpoint, I agree. You know, end of January, for some junior teams, December. And now their season's over and they can't curl in U18s. So they sit idle until the next, you know, September, October. So from a development point, I do see that standpoint where they're coming from a competitive standpoint. As a competitor, I just think that flow works a lot better just going, you know, back to back.
We threw out another suggestion too of why not have two seasons, play four person curling for the first part and probably mixed doubles and three triples for the second part, and sort of have two Canadian championships of juniors, one for four person at the end of January, then mixed doubles and triples maybe in April, as to fill the season. Because mixed doubles, we want everybody to grab a hold of it. It's an Olympic sport, yet there's no event for juniors.
I definitely agree with that. Curling Alberta has actually done a pretty good job thus far. This was the first year I noticed, but I think last year they had it as well. They have a junior mixed doubles tour. So those junior teams that don't win provincials, they would continue forward, and their provincial championship for mixed doubles wouldn't be until the end of February.
So the world juniors or the qualifying or any junior eligibility, in a perfect world, it should be like the Scotties and the Briars, right? You have your playdowns after January and you go to the Worlds a couple months later. Wouldn't that, in a perfect world, isn't that the way it should be?
Well, I think right now with all our events where we're sending teams the same year, probably the biggest spread is maybe 3 weeks. Most cases, it's probably 2 weeks. But I think over time, that's going to be the best scenario for the players involved. But I mean, we're going to take a different approach here now with the juniors going forward. And I guess we'll see what happens.
Well, who makes that change? The World Curling Federation?
No, that's a Curling Canada decision. The World Curling Federation sets the dates for the World Championships, and the member nations, which are now over 60, have to adjust their playoffs or their method of determining a representative to meet those dates.
Well, Curling Canada is your friend, Warren, so we'll wait to hear from
them. They are.
Kelsey, I'm going to ask you about, because I know Kevin wants to talk to you about the club, but I first want to ask you, because we get a lot of inquiry from clubs, we get a lot of discussion about what goes on at curling clubs. We get a lot of people frustrated, everything from, as you heard earlier in the show about that it's boring at one guy's club, the managing club, the utilities are way too high. You manage the Saville Center. What do you find are the biggest challenges?
Honestly, Saville specific, the biggest challenge that I would see is just the connection between curlers are huge when it comes to the off-ice interaction, social aspect of the game. Mm-hmm. And I find that we're lacking that a little bit. It's tough to kind of formulate and mimic that environment of a curling club sometimes. And I think that's where we have a little bit of a gap right now. So that's what we're working on, or I'm working on, is getting a little bit of that. Just because I think for the biggest part, like that social aspect is what draws those curlers into your club. And that's what's going to make them stay.
So what are you thinking of doing at the Saville? Of course, I agree with you. How are you going to, I guess, what would that be? Energize the feel when people walk in the door? What are you thinking with that?
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of hoping for, is just to kind of make it more of a welcoming feel. You know, it feels like a national training center to me, rather than what a curling club would feel like, which is a great thing. And that draws people as well. Don't get me wrong. But the upstairs, maybe just, you know, including more social nights, maybe having, you know, more drink specials, things like that. We're in a, I guess, in a position where we don't manage our bar and our restaurant. So that's all externally run. And that's changing moving forward. So I think that's going to be, look a lot different.
How long have you been managing, Kelsey, that club?
It's been almost 3 years.
So COVID aside, so let's back up to 3 years ago in your first year. Is the membership growing?
Yeah, we're pretty stable. We're pretty flat, flatlined for the most part. We're a pretty big club, so we've got 10 sheets. We have three men's leagues. We have a mixed league. We have a bunch of open leagues, doubles leagues, a lot of junior leagues. We even run a men's and women's super league. This year was only men's, but yeah, this year with COVID, it was a lot different, but yeah, it's been pretty flatline the last couple of years. I'd like to see membership increase a little more, but for the most part, we're pretty good.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about this, not just the Saville, but all clubs across Canada and around the world. And with four-person curling, which takes about 2 hours, hey, give or take, about 2 hours to play an 8-end game, whereas doubles, mixed doubles or doubles, takes maybe an hour and 20 to finish a game, and triples even less, maybe an hour. Is there much doubles going on at the club? And could, if there was one doubles league an evening, could we fit in a mixed doubles and 2 four-person leagues? Could it be 2 doubles leagues and 1 four-person? Have you looked at the timing issue of all of that? Now, I know Dan'l, who is one of the ice makers, he's gonna give me heck when I see him one of these days here, because he's going to be going, Kevin, you're going to make me scrape the ice more. But anyway, your thoughts on being able to maybe have expanded scheduling and maybe entice people that prefer mixed doubles or triples over the four-person game?
Yeah, we've definitely thought about it. This year, I actually had a ton of ideas, and then COVID hit, and so it kind of kiboshed a few things. But so we actually talked about running 3 draws a night. In regards to doubles, we'd run 3 doubles draws. We had a ton of interest with doubles last spring. So with 10 sheets, we had 2 full draws, an early draw and a late draw, of just doubles teams every week. So it was really busy. This year we ran 2 doubles leagues and they were both full, which was great. And yeah, so we were looking at actually running still 4-person leagues. We were looking at running 6-end games instead of 8, because we get a lot of feedback from our curlers where 8 ends is just, especially for the beginner curlers getting into it, it's just a little too long. So we were looking at going to have like a 6-pack Saturday where they only do 6 ends.
6-pack Saturday. That's a good
name. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, now I do want to talk to you about triples curling, because it's kind of an invention, I think, of Rob Krebs. I think it's kind of came out of his mind. As it's played at the Saville, especially with the U of A program and young kids. Your thoughts on it, having the 3 positions and everybody alternate. I'll tell you why. I've had lots of response. One guy, Andrew Brett, he's one of the owners at Goldline Curling. So Andrew's a great guy. And him and I were just having a chat. And he said, I wish there was triples curling. I would definitely, because he got into curling and he's been lead ever since. He's stuck in lead position. He'd love to try other things. Like, but he's, you know, and his team, he's in the right position as a 4-person team, but he'd like to do more of the game. And if he could get into a triples league, he'd be all over it. I guess talk about triples a little bit, because it was a U of A invention, invention with the varsity program, and your thoughts on switching positions at a beginner level.
Yeah. As far as triples go, I'll be honest, I've actually never played it. I graduated from the U of A year before Rob implemented it, so I never did play it. But I have watched it a lot, and we've ran triples leagues at the Saville as well. As far as it goes, it's a huge draw for our curlers, quite honestly. We ran a big seniors triples league and they loved it, because finally, like you said, the guy that always plays second got to play other positions and got to throw other shots that he normally wouldn't in his 4-person game. So that was a huge draw. I think I agree with you in the aspect that competitive play, we want to stick to our positions. But from looking at it from the recreational lens, I think the idea of triples and rotating those positions gives curlers more of a chance to learn the game.
It teaches you sweeping, line calling, skipping, strategy. And to a lot of the people that sent us emails and responses talking about this stuff, when it comes to revenues, because obviously a four-person game, you have four members. They're saying, well, you know, mixed doubles and doubles, we're only getting half the revenue to the club. But of course, my answer was you can get more draws. Triples is even better because it's the shortest of all three options, but yet you've got three people and such a good learning opportunity. And I did not know, Kelsey, that the Savile actually has triples actual leagues. I did not know that. So I'm really happy to hear that because I think triples is a huge game for the future of our sport.
Kelsey, I got a bit of a tough question for you. When we started doing this podcast, a lot of the interest started to come about changing the game. The image of curling is an old man sport. Warren has talked at length about that curling needs to improve. It's not where it was. It's dropping. The venues for the finals for the Briars and the Scotties is getting less and less. And I think the general consensus out of all that is we got to get to young curlers. We've got to get young curlers involved. Tyler Tardy, we had on Tyler. Is it Tyler Powell Warren, who's pretty outspoken about it? Yeah. And they've got some very interesting things to say. They're outspoken about it. But if things don't change, that the sport of curling may die, and that's because young people are not interested in the sport. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I totally agree, to be quite honest. I think there is a bit of a gap right now with younger teams coming up, whether it's competitive or recreationally. As far as looking at from, you know, the club standpoint, that was my big focus, was going to be my big focus this year when recruiting those to come to the Savile. Just the longevity of, you know, recruiting them when they're younger and then they stick around throughout their careers, whether they go into the competitive streams or they stay recreationally. I think that's the biggest thing. And whether, you know, my two big ideas where you make the game shorter to keep their, you know, get them involved by grabbing their attention quickly. And then once they become involved more with the game, that's when you can lengthen it, add in rules. They start to understand the game more. But when I think of when I go and play, you know, recreational slow pitch in the summers and things like that, I'm doing it for the social aspect. And sure, you know, you get competitive out there, but at the same time, you don't want to play a 3-hour game for a sport you're just beginning. You want to play something short, simple. And I think that's how you get, you know, those younger populations starting to get more interested in the game.
So what are you doing now, Kelsey? You ran the club, but the club is closed. What's taking up all your time these days?
Yeah, I'm actually, I'm doing my master's right now in counseling. So I've actually started working at a school in behavioral therapy. So I've been doing that full time. I'm going in and with all the kids, and I've been doing that the last month or so. And then I'll keep doing that until the club opens back up, say July and August, and then I'll switch back over to doing that. But for the time being, that's, I'm just focusing on school and getting some more work experience that way.
Good for you. How far away from completing your master's? That's no easy task.
I'll be done next March.
Oh, good for you.
So about a year. Yeah.
Good. Because I've got a few other people that you should counsel, okay, to it, and including myself, okay. Kelsey, this was great. Thank you very much. Congratulations on a fantastic career so far. And I know we're going to see you whenever this gets back to normal. It's not going to be very long till we see you at the Scotties for sure. Take care, Kelsey.
Thank you for having me. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Kelsey.
Thanks, Kelsey.
Well, fellas, another good show. Thank God for Kelsey. She saved it. She saved it. A lot of good stuff on this show. I know it's going to generate a bunch of emails. And if you want to get a hold of us, insidecurling@gmail.com. And we're on Twitter at Curling Inside, Facebook at Inside Curling, and Instagram at Inside Curling Podcast. You did well, boys. You get a star again. Kevin, well done. Isn't she a fine young girl? She's another future curler, you guys, that's going to take the world by storm, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely a future champion. Well, already has been a champion, but definitely one of our strongest female curlers coming up, and well-spoken, and, you know, has just done a really good job at the Savile Sports Center as well. And she kind of downplayed her role. But when anytime you're talking about a club, going from two draws tonight to three, you know you're busy, and she's doing a great job there.
Yeah, and Warren, she was, I loved her answer, Warren, when I said, it's got to be tough to curl in Alberta, because you know you got, you know, it's a long shot, man, to win the province, but she said, I got no problem with it.
Yeah, I'm tough. Yeah. No, I can't believe how well-spoken so many of these young people we've had on are. I think if we get a few more like them in the sport, the sport's going to be in good hands going forward.
And you'll be in good hands again next week. Thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week on another episode of Inside Curling.